Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So we're right on the precipice of Super League. We've done the first three chapters. We've really built it up well. We're not going to hear the next chapter of the Super League story in this episode. You'll hear that next week. What I really wanted to do was wrap a bow around our prelude, if you will, by addressing some of the brilliant emails we've got. We did a bit of a reach out for Twitter, some questions, and just a few little miscellaneous pieces here and there before we really get to the heart of Super League.
We've been saying since the first incarnation of the show that our community is, you know, intelligent rugby league fans, and these emails prove it because some of the insight, it's really opened my eyes, to be honest.
Yeah, and my whole thing with this is I didn't want to go in with any preconceived ideas about who was right, who was wrong, what should have happened, you know, all the rest of it. I really wanted to learn and be open to changing my mind. And the email, the caliber of the emails we keep getting is like so invaluable.
But what's funny about it is I always just thought that, particularly on the ARL side, that most people were for it. But judging by the emails, there's a lot of people that weren't that thrilled with the ARL side either.
Mm.
Not saying that they were pro Super League, but that there was a lot less blind loyalty than I thought.
I also think there's a lot of people like me who had blind loyalty one way or the other at the time, and 25 years of perspective gives us all a chance to rethink.
Yeah, that always happens with wars. No one's going, I mean, I think the North Vietnamese were right, you know.
So before we get into opening the mailbag and going through some of those questions, I just want to touch on a couple of, you know, corrections or more information that has been given to us since we recorded it. So this is just a little miscellaneous thing. The first one is just something I wanted to address about the way we've presented the story so far. And that's the idea of inevitability, which has kind of been a bit of a theme or an unconscious theme throughout this, you know, opening three chapters, that it was naturally building towards something. But as someone who takes history very seriously, I think it's important to point out that nothing in history is ever inevitable. You needed those actors. You needed everything to be in place and have, you know, News Limited come in with money at the right time to do it. So I feel we've gone a bit too heavy-handed with the theme of inevitability.
It goes both ways. Like, it's almost inevitable that the game will never change as well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we've proved over and over again for 2 years with every history con we've ever done. But it's very easy to see a situation where things just chug along business as usual for another, you know, 10 or 20 years before maybe sputtering out or maybe, you know, hitting new heights. But
well, we're getting that now at the present time where it's always like, yeah, I mean, there's going to be no expansion talk for another 3 to 5 years, and then 3 to 5 years goes and we hear it. So, yeah. It's going to be another 2 to 3 years at least before we open the books on
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it could be another 3 decades before someone goes, you know what, we haven't done anything again.
So, yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that, the fact that, you know, we went a bit heavy on it is all I wanted to say on that.
It was presented quite fairly, but, I mean, there is two sides to the argument, like you say, but I don't think you should be apologising.
Okay. The other thing, a number of people sent in... In our first episode, when we were looking at the 94 footy cards and wondered why the 5 goal cards were chosen, so it was Daly Stewart, Mark Coyne, Brad Mackay, and Kerrod Walters. So a couple of people pointed out that the reason for that is that they were the 5 players of the year in David Middleton's 1993 annual.
I didn't know that Middo had that sort of power back in 93. But...
Well, I think his annual, which, you know, he put out every year, that was like the official word of rugby league that year.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's where that came in. So I actually meant to go back and look at the criteria and see what criteria was used to come up with those 5 players.
You know how much I love Middo? just that name is so synonymous with stats in rugby league. I think Andrew Ferguson could be the next gen on that, but friend of the show. But it's just good to have a guy like that that's ubiquitous in the game, you know? It's like Mido knows. You know, ask Mido.
It's so funny that you mentioned Andrew Ferguson, because you'd always hear it on TV, you know, or radio. It'd be like, you know, some obscure thing, and they'll say, like, you know, like, oh, where's Mido, you know? You see the same thing on Twitter now. Any question asked about anything in rugby league, someone's like, you know, tag Andrew Ferguson, you know?
Yeah.
And we've been guilty of that on many occasions ourselves. The other thing was from Kyle Kutasi, who is a lawyer, and when we mentioned the West's High Court case and how did they have money to fight that when they were, you know, holding raffles to keep themselves afloat.
I said, no, it was a guessing competition, if you recall.
Yeah, sorry to besmirch the marketing geniuses at West there. So he said there are a number of ways that they could have funded this case. So firstly, it could have been like get a lawyer to take it on a no-win fee. West Ashfield is security. So they could have just been like throwing everything at the wall and said, well, if we lose, we're stuffed anyway, so what does it matter? And there's also something called a suitor's fund, which is used to pay litigants who win the first case, then lose on appeal with the argument that they wouldn't have appealed if the judge got it right in the first place.
I would suggest that it was done not unlike Tommy building the gym in the squash courts. I reckon they would have bludged some favours, like pro bono barristers and what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting, though.
Yeah, yeah. So really good insight there. Appreciate that. And the last thing, I just wanted to shout out Lonnie Gilroy, who got in touch with us on our socials, just to tell us about the docu-series he's put up on YouTube of the history of the Toowoomba Clydesdales. So it's called Toowoomba on Top of the World. It's a three-part doco, and it is brilliant. It's so well done. It was one of those things where you get the notification and you're like, you know, oh yeah, I'll check it out. See, you know, little pat on the head, well done you. And then you watch it and you're like, shit, this is really good.
Yeah, awesome.
So everyone get to YouTube and check that out.
In terms of second tier clubs, like Toowoomba Clydesdales is one of the great names, one of the great clubs.
Yeah, yeah. And as you see from the doco series, a very rich history, some of the greats of the game. And, you know, at certain points, the strongest team in the country, you know, forget about second tier.
Yeah.
So now we're going to open up the listener mailbag. So over the last few months, we've been reaching out for some of your personal memories and recollections of the Super League era. And I'm just constantly blown away by the great stories, the, you know, really smart insights, all the rest of it. So I wanted to kind of share it with the listening public at large.
I mean, there's too many to put in the episode as well. Yeah. I mean, they're all of the same quality. So if you didn't get in the episode, but thanks for sending it anyway, you know.
Mm. So I wanted to start with Ryan Goss, who's one of our Brisbane listeners. So I'm just going to read out part of his email. And this is in relation to the idea of bias against the New South Wales Rugby League and the part that played in the Broncos, you know, getting Super League going. My sense as a kid in Brisbane at the time was that virtually the uniformly held view among regular fans was that the Broncos were consistently discriminated against by the Sydney officials, treated disrespectfully, and generally looked down on. This wasn't usually presented as an opinion or argument. It was a known state of affairs that everyone agreed on.
You can put that down to the newspaper, Courier Mail, right? That was in the era before the internet, clearly, so newspapers shaped everybody's opinion. Radio, newspaper, and television just shaped everybody's opinion. There was no going straight to the source in those days, like Twitter. They're pushing that propaganda the whole time. Of course they thought like that.
I think it goes beyond. I think he's right in claiming that it goes beyond the newspapers, but because you already had this simmering tension, New South Wales versus Queensland. When the Broncos came in, you know, that was amplified even more. You had, you know, players and coaches coming out in the media. I think it's simplistic to say it was just the Courier Mail were, like, you know, pushing the point and everyone got on board. I think you can see some of the decisions the way they went. Like, I don't think it was, you know, favoritism, discrimination in the way that maybe they thought it was at the time. But
I think they definitely weren't that fond of them, though.
No, yeah.
But as we said in the last couple of episodes of the Super League series, it come from the top of the Broncos swaggering down there and big noting.
And he goes on to talk about the impact that had on Brisbane people's opinion on Super League. So I'll just read this. As such, for many of us, even as kids in the mid-90s, The possibility of Super League was genuinely exciting. Finally, a chance to fix the many problems we'd seen the Broncos being on the wrong side of. And when I read that, it actually gave me cause to think of a perspective that I hadn't previously considered.
Me too, yeah.
So in 1995, the BRL was only 7 years removed from essentially being rationalised in the same way that the Sydney clubs were being talked about with the coming of Super League.
Yeah.
So if you're a Brisbane fan or a fan of rugby league in Brisbane, I think it's natural that you just consider it as the next phase in the process.
Yeah, didn't even occur to me.
The idea of traditionalism, well, they'd already lost their traditional comp. Like, traditionalism was already dead in their eyes. You know, why would they be nostalgic about a Sydney tradition that was never their own?
Absolutely.
So that's just something I think we in New South Wales, Sydney particular, forget about a lot, that there's tradition means different things to different people.
See, right there is an example of it. It's not wanton discrimination against Queensland. It's just they're an afterthought in our minds always.
Yeah. And that's been the best part of doing this show, honestly, is the interaction with people in Queensland.
Yeah.
Because, growing up, it's not even that they're thought of as the enemy. It's just this alien kind of,
slow talking.
They straw chewing. I was not trying to, hit those stereotypes. I was trying to do this in a rational, a rational kind of thing. But sure, let's two heads. What else do you got?
I mean, I quite enjoyed Sir Joe and Flo's scones, whatever. But apart from that.
But it's actually been a genuine kind of bridge building that I've been experiencing the last couple of years.
And in the modern era, Queensland fans are the best fans in the game.
Mm.
And I want them to get the grand final.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
I keep pushing that angle every episode, but sorry.
And Ryan was by no means the only Queensland listener who shared that perspective. So I want to thank anyone else who did, but we're just going to use that for the Brisbane part of this segment. Just before we do move on from Brisbane, but in the same realm is, their class of 88 mates, the Newcastle Knights. Fuzzy Dunlop at RCB Sharks asked the question, why weren't Newcastle considered in until 1988? Why didn't a Newcastle team get in earlier? And in fact, Newcastle had been mooted as early as, I think it was 77 or 78. So it was a decade-long process to get them in. The simple explanation is they just weren't ready any earlier than 88. Well, they were probably ready before 88, but they weren't ready in the early 80s when the opportunity came around.
It's crazy that the Steelers were and Newcastle weren't.
Yeah. So basically, they weren't ready then, and then the next opportunity was 88. Moving on, I wanted to mention Guy Hansen, who shared an article he wrote for the publication Centenary Reflections, which the Australian Society of Sports History put out to mark the centenary of rugby league in Australia, edited by friend and colleague Andy Carr. Shout-outs to Andy. And Guy wrote an article on the Gladiators image, which I read that article a few years ago, and I forgot about it when I was putting that segment of the show together, and I'm really dirtying myself for forgetting it.
Filthy.
Because there's some really interesting stuff in that article. On top of a lot of the same kind of things we talked about in that discussion, just a couple of things stood out to me from the article upon rereading that I just wanted to touch on. Firstly was the fact that John O'Grady's photograph appeared in the paper as kind of a joke. Like, it was just the iconic image with the caption, "Who's that?" And there's something so beautiful and so very rugby league about that.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't think any sport has benefited from serendipity as much as rugby league has.
There's not been one major rugby league touchstone that wasn't stumbled across.
Yeah, but this is almost the opposite of that, in that it wasn't viewed as iconic until rugby league saw it and said, "That's iconic, we're going to do it." So in a sense, it's not an example of that, but I just thought it was so kind of touching that it came from this kind of joke image to be one of the greatest sporting images in the world.
Well, hang on, wasn't it the Winfield cigarette executive that
yeah, well, you know, rugby league adjacent then.
So rugby league just had no idea about it.
Yeah. But so someone at the paper knew that it was a good photo. So Jack Percival, who was on the editorial staff, said that it was the second best photo he'd ever seen behind the raising of the American flag at Iwo Jima.
Yeah, right.
I think it's right up there too. And just another thing from that article, I'm just going to read this out because, again, very rugby league. Throughout the 1970s, the grand final was held on Saturday afternoons with seating for the game unnumbered. Fans would queue for tickets at their league's club and then again at the gates of the Sydney Cricket Ground. A leading New South Wales Rugby League official, Bob Abbott, put forward the idea of providing entertainment on the match day and involving a greater range of sponsors. I think that's something we missed in talking about the advances made through the Humphreys era. The idea that your grand final was an event and should be treated as such.
Not just like an extra round. Yeah. I would like to hear from our some listeners that are a bit older. And if you're on Twitter or something, if you can ask your parents or whatever, uncles, and aunties, and all the rest of it. Like, what was match day like in the 70s?
Yeah, I'd be interested to know when those junior league games started. But like the grand final replay on a Tuesday. You know,
just to minimize eyeballs on the product.
Just a few other random ones. This email, I think I forwarded it to you with the line, "This gave me a hard on," and I can't even go into the email in depth. But
well, I would have deleted that because I don't appreciate filth. But...
So Matthew Price sent us a long email about his experiences of growing up as a rugby league fan in Adelaide.
Yeah,
awesome. At the height of the war and seeing the Rams come in. And I can't go into it in detail because we've got a Rams episode coming and I've actually got like great content for that episode from his email. Just one thing I wanted to pick out of it was the other, it seems obvious, but I think it's worth talking about the other reason people's allegiances one way or the other were formed. So I'll just read this from Matthew's email. "Super League really tested my values. I really hated how a private company could come in and look to take out and take over a community asset like the ARL at the time. But I had the possibility of being able to go and watch football every second week. But like a boomer about to lose their franking credits, I ended up siding and watching more Super League in 1997. I had the Foxtel subscription, I bought the Super League magazine, had an Adelaide Rams jumper and had a season ticket with a number of other people I knew."
That's awesome.
And also it's kind of like no matter what your personal, you know, thoughts on the matter, if you're a passionate fan of a club and they go to Super League, it'd be very hard to put your values, you know, first and say, okay, I'm not supporting them anymore. If you're in a one-team town that goes one way or the other, well, your kind of hands are tied.
Absolutely. It's and I think it was divided down club lines in many places, wasn't it?
Mm.
Canterbury fans just went, oh, well, Canterbury's with them. So.
Yeah, and I think we said that in our prelude at the time, if the Dragons had gone to Super League, there's no chance that I wouldn't have followed them, you know?
Which, according to a back page of the Daily Telegraph, they were going.
Yeah, and yeah, we've got episodes on that coming, don't worry.
I mean, I voted for this as an episode standalone in itself, but when Fatty Vorton saw Kerry Walters' shaved head when he went to the Rams and he said to Kerry on the Sunday Footy Show, "Kerry, how bad your melon?" That's what makes me think of the Rams.
So that and Chubby Checker's appearance on stage in a Rams jersey, they're probably 1A and 1B of the Rams era.
Do you reckon Chubby Checker kept the Rams jersey?
I hope so. Is he still alive? Maybe he could be buried in it. I wanted to mention Matthew Hunt's email, who sent us a great, like, just... In kind of, you know, expanded dot points, some of his memories of the Super League era.
That's so, my style too. I love that.
Yeah. So he was 26 years old when the war broke out. I'm just going to pull a few of my favorites out. So this one just really got me, just really putting you in a time and place. So I'm just going to read this out. "The first I heard about it was on April 1, 1995. My mate and I had planned our dream day. Fishing in the morning at Guymere Bay Baths, watching rugby league in the Dolphin Hotel, Norths vs Warriors, then seeing the Rolling Stones at the SCG that night, the latter of which we cut out a piece of SCG turf and planted at home. As I waited for the train at Miranda Station to take me into the city, my mate, who was on the incoming second carriage, held the Daily Telegraph up to the window of the carriage, and the headline screamed something like, 'It's war.'"
Amazing.
Sideline, I think I might have been at that very same Rolling Stone show, so that's cool. But just...
chills in that description.
And just that April Fool's Day, which obviously we've got multiple episodes on coming up, but when it hit, like, it was like nothing before.
How apt, though, April Fool's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that saying? There's nothing sooner parted than a fool and his money. One thing I'd like to say about that point is that huge day they had planned, and then they spent hours fishing beforehand. I mean, that's exhausting. Get some rest and then go to the other things.
And his next point, at the 1996 Grand Final barbecue, half the 30 blokes in attendance were split between ARL and Super League, culminating in drunken yet raucous ARL, ARL versus Super League, Super League chant. Tempers were frayed. Like, I remember, like, similar... I don't think I ever got to the stage of having chants going off, but, like, my mates who were Dogs fans were just so passionate about things that, to me, like, the jerseys, the balls, I hated that marketing so much. And they were all just like, nah, those jerseys are so cool. Like, you know, everything for the ARL you had to be into, and vice versa on the Super League.
See, I thought the Super League balls and jerseys were far superior, and I think the ARL visuals were appalling across the, starting with the New South Wales Origin jerseys and going down.
Well, that was obviously a very dark period for New South Wales Origin jerseys. I mean that literally and figuratively. I don't know why we've gone back to something approaching that this year. Like,
yeah, lunacy.
I just thought everything about the way Super League was marketed was so transparently going for the American look and so soulless.
They were trying to bring it into the modern age after years of chook raffling, and then, and of course, everyone else is trying to bring them down to our level. It's like, no, this is bloody American.
But I think the problem with trying to look modern is that it, you know, it kind of encases you in amber. And, like, it's so clearly, like, a 90s look. It's so clearly, like, influenced by things going on at the time. It doesn't have that timelessness.
I think you're being hard on Super League there. I think I think they out-marketed at the ARL.
I think we should put up a Twitter poll on this one. Just a very simple, like, did you like the Super League jerseys? What are your thoughts of the uniformity of it all? Like, every team had to be, like,
basically... I thought it was cool. I thought it was really cool. It was elegance. It was like,
no.
It was uniformity instead of having, like, I mean, think about the Balmain jerseys of the ARL year.
They weren't good.
And yeah. Like, it's just, there's always like mishmash of like, it's like Super League hired an interior decorator and the ARL hired nobody and just threw some wallpaper up. That's what it felt like to me.
I think you make a good point then, just that even the ARL teams, that they'd kind of gone away from their traditional look in many respects.
Yeah, they were trying hard.
Yeah, you weren't getting the classic jersey of those clubs.
If they were smart back then, they would have said, well, this is about tradition. We're going to our traditional jersey, Manly 87, Tigers 89, et cetera.
Mm.
And everyone would have went, oh, that suits.
All right, this is a question for you. The Crushers jersey.
Liked it.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant. And that was... It wasn't like it wasn't going for a modern look, but it was very unusual colours.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I thought it was the best jersey of the four new clubs in 95.
Didn't like the name, didn't like the idea of the Crushers or anything like that, but the jersey I could get on board with.
Yeah. It's a good name, even if the train and it's like a
odd
cane crushing train. What's a crusher? Anyway, it sounds cool and the jersey was good.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not get too sidetracked by this. So there was a lot more in that email from Matthew. It was all gold, but I just wanted to pick out one little piece more. So he had a mate who went to the infamous Cronulla Leagues Club meeting where Mal Meninga did the, you know, what did rugby league ever give me speech.
Typical Mal Meninga quote, no good.
We've got an episode on that later in the series, which I'm really looking forward to. So Matthew had a friend there, so I'm going to read this out from his email. When it came to an open question time, a very pissed, as in drunk, Billy Smith got on the mic, introduced himself and proceeded for the next few painful minutes to give the growingly impatient audience a drunken history of his playing career and achievements. This all climaxed in Billy's very deep, meaningful, and insightful question. Well, by Billy's standards, anyway.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
What are you doing to our game?
I laughed out loud when I read that on the email. It's Matthew Hunt's a genius writer.
Yeah.
I love the structure of that. But Billy Smith, he's just a legend.
I love Billy Smith. He actually appeared at a Men at League do at Oatley RSL last year with Bob McCarthy. Just a couple of other humorous ones. This one from Chris Bailey at Fat Harry Lazy on Twitter. So part of the great rugby league Twitter community that always enjoyed the tweets and the interactions. He sent us a really good email as well. Another Queenslander talking about his experiences. He's one that actually did, a Penrith fan, he actually did ditch the Panthers during Super League.
Yeah, I don't know how many people did that.
Mm.
That's a big move.
Yeah, came back to them after the war. But the highlight of his email for me was this. I think this was his closing. I met St. John Ellis. He called me a little bastard at a footy carnival in Wynnum. My mate told him if he was any good, he'd be playing reserve grade at the Broncos.
That's too funny.
Another humorous note, Matthew Willoughby sent us a great email talking about being at uni at the time and having a friend who was going out with one of Bullfrog's daughters. So she got them into the post-match function after the 94 grand final, but they'd been at the Leagues Club on the can since about 9 a.m. So, you know, well lubricated. And his mate went up to Marty Bella and said, "Nice work off the kickoff, dickhead." got slapped across the face by Marty and was asked to leave shortly after.
That's hilarious. The stuff these people put up with, these players. It was like the guy in the Canterbury dressing room telling David Clemmer he should put an offload in his game. The stuff they put up with.
The next section. So please keep those emails coming in because they've been so good.
I mean, how many golden, hilarious football moments are there in every fan's life? You run across players at school or whatever when they come and visit or in the street, and there's always some hilarious interaction. When Terry Hill was banging my mate's bicycle helmet up the lights, yeah, in Toronto. Like, footy players just can't help but be hilarious.
Please keep them coming. I haven't been able to talk about a lot of the emails we've got, and this goes for some of your Twitter questions as well, because I don't want to spoil the story. I mean, as much as a 25-year-old news story can be spoiled, I'm saving some stuff up for when we get to it, you know, naturally over the course of the series.
I would like to see if there's someone out there that doesn't know the end of the story, yeah, like maybe an American or something. Yeah, saying, yeah. What's going to happen? You don't want to know.
But so the next section, a lot of the emails and Twitter questions we got relate to the mergers and, you know, things that could have happened with the way the competition was structured. So I'm calling this section the sliding doors of rugby league. Shout out to James Hooper.
But there was so many different proposals on the table. Nothing was off limits,
yeah,
in that era.
Yeah. So I want to shout out a long-time listener, Dave Hunter, who sent us emails about this, asked a Twitter question as well. I love his dedication. In his email, he talked about being a 15, 16-year-old footy fan at the time, thinking about the mergers, designing his own jerseys for the teams he thought could have been good.
I did the same thing.
Yeah, I knew you would have. But so rather go into the many proposals and you know, get bogged down in it, I just thought we could handle this with a couple of questions. So firstly, I've thought about this and I want you to give your own answer. The best and worst case for rationalisation or compromise with News Limited in, you know, 94 or 95.
All my life I've been saying the ARL should have done that and it would have been short-term pain and we would have been riding high on the hog, you know, 10 years later. But the more I look at it, the more I think I'm being far too simplistic about that. I'm going to misquote a friend of the show, Niccolo Machiavelli. If you're going to commit an atrocity, do it all in one go, and then rather than piecemeal and prolonging the agony and everyone's on edge, that sort of thing. That was my thinking the whole time. Just do it now, get rid of all these Sydney clubs, make them a national comp, it'll build naturally, we'll be fine. But North Sydney Bears, with the area I live in, and that small microcosm of guys, like, I never watched another game. I think that would have been just a mass situation across the whole of Queensland and New South Wales.
Yeah.
And we would have lost so many people.
Well, that...
generations.
That kind of speaks to my best case. And my best case is essentially one of the options that News presented the ARL with, which was basically you run the competition as it currently is, and it will essentially be a second-tier feeder system for our Super League. Now, I'm not saying that the ARL should have accepted that. Like, whatever the argument, there's no way the ARL would have been happy with that, and, you know, nor should they have been. But I just think if that had happened, let's just say they, you know, threw their guns down and said, okay, no mergers, Sydney clubs stay as they are essentially the New South Wales Cup, and then there's new entities at Super League level, it would have given people the option to choose and say, right, well, my club's still alive, I'm following them. I'm also going to, you know, see the Sydney Vikings or wherever it might have been in the Super League, or maybe they just would have said, I'm not interested in that, but I'm still going to watch Balmain every Saturday afternoon.
See, I didn't think of it like that as a second tier. I thought of it as like, just get rid of them and then have the merged clubs remaining.
See, that's what you were thinking at the time, or is that...
No, in this exercise now.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking like, keep Balmain around and then have the Sydney Vikings. I was thinking like, make it the West Tigers and no more Balmain.
Yeah.
I just think it was having them hanging around would have been more of an insult.
See, I think that's the issue now. I think now it's at the point where if the merger is going to happen, you kind of do have to let go of the old clubs and have it be one club going into the future.
So there's the argument of the Newtown Jets and how, you know, it's a great little community thing and blah, blah, blah. But if you got rid of Easts and made South the club, which Dave Hutter suggested, do you want East still hanging around as a thorn in your side or just extinct?
Well, yeah, so I'm saying my best case scenario is no mergers, just have the old clubs running as they were.
Right.
And this best case, I'm not even saying this would have worked. I'm just saying I think of all the options, real or imagined, this is probably the most painless one I could think
of. Probably painlessness, but I think ineffectiveness as well. I think my dream scenario back in the day was have four Sydney clubs, North, South, East and West, and a national comp, Australasian comp. That was my logical scenario, but I don't think it would have worked.
And so those four Sydney clubs, were they completely new entities?
Well, in my 14-year-old or 17-year-old, 14 mentally brain, it was new entities. Northern suburbs, I was thinking, southern suburbs, East Sydney, West Sydney. That was what I thought was a masterstroke back then. And it was just like, start fresh and make it like the NFL or whatever, and step with this four instead of two, and we'll go on from there. Mm. Short-term pain, long-term gain, but I don't think it would have worked. I think the only thing that would have worked, and it would have been the longest-term pain, would be natural attrition.
Yeah.
No salary cap, let's just watch them all die. But then what would we have then? We might have Penrith left and Canterbury, and that's the only team to the left. It's like, doesn't really cover the Sydney area, does it?
I definitely think that would have been the most effective, like without a doubt, if they just scrapped the salary cap for 3 years and let it play out. I think it would have played out. So I think that would have been the most effective. I've said my best case. It's funny because your kind of best case is kind of like my worst case.
But that's like utopian thinking. It would never have worked.
Well, because one of the options that was being talked about at the time was these, you know, mass mergers where it's not just, you know, St. George and Cronulla, it's St. George and Cronulla and Canterbury, or St. George, Cronulla and Illawarra, you know, Balmain, South, and, you know, it was these like 3-4-way mergers that, like, they were looking at geography and nothing else.
But that's what I was looking at. I thought I was an entrepreneur and a business guy back then. And since engaging with the rugby league community since we're doing this show, I've got so much more respect for the tribal nature of rugby league, where I didn't have that respect back then.
And you got to say, like, the history of mergers in the post-Super League era is patchy at best, you know?
Yeah, but it's sort of like if you're building a building a hot rod and you've got some, you know, old clunky parts that are rusted through, it's not going to be the fastest car, is it?
Yeah. So I definitely think that mergers is like not the optimal way of doing it. Like, I think new entities would have been like less painful.
Well, let me ask you this: with the damage that was done with the two comps and the forced mergers and the, you know, clunky mergers, do you think a complete fresh start would have been less pain than that? Four new Sydney clubs.
And what happens to the old clubs? Do they exist in any form?
Well, I didn't think that far ahead, being a moron. But probably if we left the old clubs as a feeder, maybe.
So yeah, I mean that was my best case exactly. That the Super League isn't, you know, Canterbury get in, Cronulla get in. It's the Sydney clubs stay as they are.
I just wanted to get rid of suburban names out of a national competition. I just thought it was crazy.
Do you still feel that way now?
Not as much. I'm not in love with the fact that we've got Manly Warringah, you know, a hyphenated couple of suburbs in a national competition, Canterbury, Bankstown, etc., Cronulla, Sutherland. It's like, I just think it's provincial and embarrassing. Yeah. But I get that the tribalism is underrated and a huge part of rugby league.
Yeah. And it is a different landscape. It's a very particular place. You can't just make it, you know, oh, it's not the, you know, Pittsburgh, outlying suburb of Pittsburgh Steelers. It's, you know, like one entity. It's a different landscape here. And I think that has to be considered.
But here's what annoys me. It's like Balmain was a tough guy neighborhood, right? You know, dock workers and et cetera. And now look at it. Like, there were no rugby league ball.
Mm.
So why are we so attached to these suburbs when they change over time anyway?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that goes back to the, you know, it's tribal, but where are the tribes? You know, my thinking then and now.
Well, looking at Dave Hunter's email, he had southern suburbs as an idea, right?
Mm.
The Rabbitohs. So
yeah.
Keep South and get rid of East. That would be my dream.
Yeah.
And if we did that in 95, who would really care
if
the Roosters weren't there for that many years?
Especially at that point of time.
Yeah.
Before Gus, before Freddie, before Politis' money.
Yeah.
They were so ripe for just being, you know, kind of
erased. The fans they have now come from the success.
Yeah.
And a few oldies.
Mm.
It would have been like Norse, basically.
Yeah.
Like, is anyone shedding a tear for Norse besides Flo, the poor bugger?
So the second question is, we won't spend as long on it, but what merger or relocation, whether proposed or imagined, intrigues you? And that's the operative word here, intrigues. Not necessarily the one you think would have worked the best or one that would have worked at all. But which one stands out in your mind?
The one that always comes into my head is Ipswich, because I don't like the idea of a second Brisbane team. I think it's cannibalising an already huge fan base for the Broncos. Central Queensland intrigues me as well. The more Queensland teams, the better. I just don't like the second Brisbane.
All right, but going back to 95, could that have included a Crushers, maybe rebranded, moved slightly?
Yeah, so I never got the idea of the Crushers. Southeast Queensland based in Brisbane,
Well, it shows how I was thinking. I didn't even realize they were a second Brisbane team when they came in. It was Southeast Queensland, okay.
Now, also, saying that the hyphenated suburb names is provincial, Southeast Melbourne Magic in the NBL, do you think they stole it off them? Southeast Queensland?
Yeah.
Like, do we need Southeast? Crazy. Anyway, but if the Crushers were moved to Ipswich, I'd be happy back then.
The one that really stands out to me is the idea of St. George moving to Melbourne, which would have been their likely Super League future.
That would have been hot.
I don't know. There's something about it as a St. George fan that I think like is really cool. Like the idea of still having my club, being able to get down to Melbourne and watch them, you know, a couple of times a year. And
if we have any traitorous AFL fans listening, like, what is the feeling in the AFL from South Melbourne Swans fans about Sydney Swans? You know, do they support them when they visit Melbourne?
They absolutely do. There's a real, like, you know, a South Melbourne, like the old school, like, fan base still there.
So I think it's better to have your club existing in another city in its original form than emerged.
Yeah. For me, the merger worked perfectly. So I as a fan, like, the best case scenario is what I got. You know, I still get to go to Cogra and watch my team play in the same jersey. So I'm glad it worked out the way things did for my own selfish reasons, but I think it would have worked really well.
I think relocation is such an underrated option. and people are always fighting. It's like, they'll still be in Sydney 100 times a year. Like, you can still watch your team. You don't watch them anyway, so...
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, I mean, you can watch them on TV. Nothing has to change. but the other thing about having a team like St. George go to Melbourne, they've always been a team that has fans outside their area.
Yeah.
So there would have been like a built-in fan base wherever they went.
Well, but then let's back it up. See, I thought the Northern Eagles was the biggest no-brainer in the history of no-brainers. It was a colossal failure.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that, which when the time comes, we'll get into at length. But there is that the cultural issue can't be understated. The if two entities meet that have that natural, like, you know, antagonism.
This is the problem with rugby league and mergers, is the game is built on antagonism.
Mm.
You can't be a rugby league administrator without being antagonistic.
Yeah.
That's in your nature. Even the smooth operators, in inverted commas, are problems.
So anything else to add about this issue before we move on?
Well, Dave's email highlighted again in my mind how naive my thinking was at the time. And there's nowhere near a perfect solution, but I don't think any of them are good.
Yeah.
The only one that would have helped us long term that was doable, I think, would have been natural attrition.
Yeah.
It's just fanciful to say we're going to scrap all the clubs and make four new ones. That's lunacy.
Yeah, I tend to agree that that would have worked the best.
Yeah.
Now we're going to look at the listener questions we asked for on Twitter. Got some great ones. There's a lot we can't use because of that spoiler issue. So a lot related to stuff that's coming up later in our series. It was really heartening to me to get those questions because I was like, oh, yeah, we've got an episode on that. Yep, we're planning that. So that was really cool that I know we're on the right track. There are also a few things that I hadn't thought of, which was really cool. So James Ellis at JRP Ellis asked about the Gilbert balls in Super League, why they weren't using Steedon. I don't know, so I'm going to be looking into that.
I really love the Gilbert ball. Now, this is a travesty for me. When I was a teenager, I bought a Union ball because it kicked better. For goal kicking and torpedoes.
Is this in the era where you were digging out the sand from your local school for your goal kicking practice?
Across the road from my nan's school was Biruban. My nan's house was a Biruban public school, and every weekend I'd dig giant holes and make mounds of dirt, and all the kids were getting ankle injuries. And when my school played them in soccer, they were bringing it up, and then I had to admit that I was the culprit. Yeah, so I had a Gilbert ball pre-Super League, maybe in 94, which is just an ultimate... Just says wanker, the Gilbert ball, doesn't it?
Mm.
But it's kicks so much better.
Yeah.
Looks better, kicks better, rounder.
So you're in theory pro Gilbert.
I don't like the name Gilbert, but I like the style of ball better.
Is there too much water under the bridge now? Is that connection to Union too strong? Like if the league announced they were ditching Steedon.
Oh, there'd be an uproar. There would be an uproar.
And would you share in it or would you be like, no, this is the way to go, it's a better ball?
No, I'd share in it because... When Steedon went to the non-natural fibre ball, that they were very Gilbert-esque, just not quite as round. Back in the early 90s, we still had the old pointy balls, the waterlogged type,
yeah.
You know. So Union were ahead of us on the balls, but we caught up with them.
Mm.
But the Super League logo on the ball looked cool. I know you don't share that.
No, definitely opinion. Not. But... so at Marshall23 _, given that the pain and upheaval of the war still failed to achieve the desired effect... Do you think Sydney rationalisation can possibly be achieved in future?
When the time comes, I think they're just going to let them die.
Yeah. I think history shows that... Well, history doesn't show it because we never let it happen, but all the other options which didn't work maybe show that the attrition is the way it's got to be. Clubs are too stubborn and, you know, self-interested to actually, you know, take the necessary steps.
There's going to be clubs that are kicking themselves. They didn't take the incentive money when it was on offer to move. There was big money being offered to relocate in past years, and the people just said no.
Mm.
I think it'll be a few people that are on the funeral pyre going, you know what? It would have been better if we were in Perth.
Yeah. Okay. So, so there was actually a few questions on the topic of, you know, expansion, rationalisation. Just a couple more. So this was asked by both Rich Cranium NRL and at Chasing Roos Pod, which is a great podcast on International Rugby League. So check that out at Chasing Roos Pod. So part of the question was sliding doors related, so I'll skip that. But Well, actually, it's all Sliding Doors related, but I'll skip the part we've already dealt with.
Well, that's Robbie Lee, Sliding Doors.
What if the expansion club stayed loyal, and what if the Reds had a fair deal financially to begin with rather than paying opponents' costs?
If the Reds stayed, we'd be just doing cartwheels now.
Yeah. And I think it's all there in the way that question's phrased. Like, I don't think the new clubs were planned with anywhere near the thought that has to go into such a venture.
But we saw that they had a good success anyway, so I don't know how it didn't carry on.
Yeah, but the money was always an issue. And
the money's an issue at every club except for Brisbane.
But I don't think you can go into that venture without a really strong plan on how this club is going to work, how the club is going to survive long term in place.
Well, I mean, that would be preferable, but like from the start they had, with the crowds they had, I don't know how it fell apart so quick. But
the most disappointing thing about that whole experience for me is it's given idiots 20 years later the ammunition anytime any expansion is mooted to say, Adelaide, Perth, we tried that, didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, as if, you know, 3 years is anywhere near a sample size to, you know, determine if it would have been a success or failure. The man himself, Andrew Ferguson, the system used to determine which teams would stay or go under the unified competition. Do you think it was the fairest way to move forward? Obviously, we're not going to go into the actual criteria in depth at this point because that's much later in our series.
I'm going to tell you this, right? The word criteria still holds negative connotations for me when I hear it this many years later, just in a normal conversation. Someone brings up criteria, I'm like, ooh. It's like a shudder. It's the worst.
But the question I have for you and for the other Andrew and for anyone else who, you know, has these same thoughts is, what criteria would have made a fan of a club go, yep, it's a fair cop?
Yeah. You know, But it's like anything. It's like, well, here's the criteria for economic growth. Now, Romania and Japan, now let's compare you two. You know, it's like apples and bowling balls.
Yeah.
But the two words associated with Super League for me are vision and criteria.
So, yes, I mean, you can argue the criteria wasn't fair. You can argue that it was arbitrary and, you know, exceptions were made. All the rest of it that we'll get into. To me, it comes back to someone was always going to be unhappy. You know, there's no way they could have done it, get 22 down to 14 without people being upset.
Yeah. I mean, our default position as rugby league people is unhappiness. Like, fury was going to be the result for somebody.
Yeah. And just finally, last question. We've actually been interacting a bit lately with former Wallaby Ben Darwin on Twitter, who's...
Yeah, we're amazing, yeah.
Despite being, you know, from the Devil's Code, seems like a really good bloke.
He's got a great new company out about sports analytics, which we're going to interview him about very soon.
Cool. So Ben asked, what were the most insane deals done for players? I think this can be answered in two words, and I'm going to let you give those two words, Andrew.
One, Stephen Edmed.
That's the one. He's not the only one, as when we get to our... He doesn't get a whole episode, but he gets a fair run in an episode coming up. It wasn't the only, like, head-scratcher, but certainly it remains the gold standard.
Also, Ben Darwin's been asking us about when we're going to cover the World Club Challenge. I think he's pretty keen to laugh at that. And
a lot of people have been asking for that.
Yeah, our Twitter's been blowing up about the World Club Challenge, and I'm dreading the episode.
It's funny because, we are going to get to it eventually, but on the ARL side, I remember, like, as I've said a few times, I didn't watch any Super League games, but I remember, like, when the World Club Challenge was on and I'd see the you know, match reports, I'd see that, you know, half the Super League teams were over in England, and I thought, that is so cool. That's the coolest thing I've ever heard, and...
My thoughts prior to post, very different. Yeah.
So that's all. As I said, we got a lot more questions that for various reasons we couldn't use, but we really appreciate it. The emails, please keep them coming in. This has been such a great journey so far, and the interactions from the listeners have meant everything to us.
Yeah, really, really enjoy it. The Facebook and the Twitter is so cool as well. Great community. We're actually on Spotify now. We've increased our technology knowledge to a What, a 1 out of 10, is it? So if you're a Spotify user, you can get on there and get the podcast, all the back catalogue. But I mean, a lot of that's week to week. But you've got the History Corners of Michael's, which are amazing. And yeah, keep interacting on Twitter with us. We love it.
And so we'll be back with the next chapter in the Super League series next week. This has been a lot of fun tonight. So I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll speak to you then.
Toodaloo.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.